Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
And let's see. Joe West just threw somebody out. He threw Tim Anderson out of the game.
I don't know about that.
I mean, he just got hit by a pitch from the Royals starting pitcher. They're going to send Keller out of here. Why would Tim get thrown out?
Well, that's what.
What
Ricky,
do you do?
That's what Ricky wants to know.
So you're going to stand there and take a projectile in the rear end and get thrown out of the game for it? That's insane. It's just wrong. You're getting thrown at. You're in danger. Of course you're going to be mad. That's ridiculous.
I'm not sure why Joe decided to insert himself
in
the Tim Anderson situation, because Tim...
It all calmed down, Tim, and then he threw him out just to do it after everybody was calmed down. Come on.
Well, no one's going to top that.
Middays on the Score.
Yeah! How about it?
I'm unclear as to how Jason feels.
I like it. There's a little tension in the voice. The baritone rises up a little bit into a different range.
It's just wrong.
It's insane. Hot damn.
You should hear his Dear Theodosia. It's fantastic.
Jason Benetti is on Twitter at Jason Benetti. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. That was good stuff yesterday. How do you really feel?
After some time to calm down, which Brad Keller also had, I've decided to calm down. My feeling, just listening to it, I firmly agree with everything that people have been saying about you can get frustrated about something and then look at it through another lens and still feel the same way but not have the same frustration. So I guess what I'm saying is the reason I get so frustrated about these sorts of things is that the pitcher had time to calm down. Tim Anderson did not. He had just gotten hit. So who's worse here? I think it's the person who had time to calm down and then decided to throw at somebody.
Jason, you're in and out of this game and in and out of ballparks and in touch with other organizations on a daily basis. It's your job. I was a little struck by the fact that Brad Keller is a 23-year-old kind of up-and-coming pitcher. Is, I don't know, enabled like this. He's just ready to roll with retaliation like this. How close, do you have any sense of how close we are to moving on to letting the kids actually play?
Well, so let me say this. I've talked to Brad Keller a little bit. As I mentioned on the telecast, he's close with Ryan Burr from the Diamondbacks days, and I just spoke to Brad the other day, actually. He's a really good guy. What I will say about this whole situation is there is a chance that it was not his idea. So that's why I didn't say his name specifically in the whole fray a whole bunch, because there's a chance. There's so much in a baseball ethos. The manager can tell you to do it. You can be pressured by teammates, whatever it might be. So I'm not here to demonize anybody necessarily. It's just more about the logic of it than anything for me, is that for baseball, over a long period of time, the only option in this sort of scenario was to hit a guy. The idea I'm presenting, and a lot of people presented before me, is that you have options. One of those options is to start a prolonged slump for the batter. Get him out a bunch. So it's not necessarily anybody's a demon here. It's let's have another choice.
I'm with you on the other choice. I wonder if that's kind of the issue at hand, though. You know, you mentioned Brad Keller and the kind of guy you seem to know him to be, or at least that he's been when you were around him. If an organization or if there's pressure to do this, on another guy who might not otherwise want to do it, that's kind of the thing that's holding us back or continuing to get Tim Anderson or guys like Tim Anderson hit in situations like this.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, what are you trying to do, right? You know, going to law school, we have a lot of discussions in classes about punishment and why we use it. Why do we incarcerate people? Is it to punish them? Is it to dissuade the behavior in the future? Is it some combination thereof? And I don't know that anybody in a situation like this, and I want to peel it back from the Royals because this is one situation, but I don't know that anybody who throws at someone thinks they're going to stop the person from doing what they did before.
Yeah.
It's just to punish them or some sort of ego rise. And I just think that there are better options. That's all. I'm not trying to tell people what to do. I just think there are other options.
I don't think it's a punishment either. I think it's the equivalent of a kid in the sandbox throwing a rock at somebody because the feelings got hurt. I mean, it's
yeah, I agree. But I've been thinking about some hypotheticals as this has all played out. And if Tim Anderson, if there was, just stay with me for a sec. If there was a hypothetical rule in baseball where it was basically make it, take it, you hit a home run and then you grab a bat again, like the new rule is home run, you get to bat again, and you get the runs that came from the home run. I would understand much more a pitcher hitting a batter after that, because in the heat of passion, you do dumb things. I've yelled at people. We've all yelled at people. That happens. We've even maybe taken a swing at somebody. In the heat of passion, I can at least begin to understand the emotions that go into that. That's why we have premeditated murder and then people retaliating in the middle of a fight, right? Mm-hmm. That takes it a long way away, but it's the same idea. So for me, if a batter comes up after hitting the home run right after and the pitcher's really tense and they do something they're not proud of, I kind of begin to understand that. If it's 3 innings later or 2 innings later, you're just doing it for some other reason to prove some point that just lives in your own mind.
I think that's right. I get it. I think that's right.
Yeah, but when Ozzie Guillen was on earlier today, I don't know if you heard him when he was on with Mully and Haw. He's always terrific. And he's sort of two minds on this. He's clearly an old school guy. And when asked directly, as a manager, do you tell Tim Anderson to tone down his act because he might, you know, might endanger other guys on the team because baseball? He said, no, it's not a manager's job, but on a well-run team, a veteran pulls him aside on the plane or sits down next to him and say, hey, you're going to get one of us hurt or you're going to get yourself hurt. And I know that that's how baseball always used to be. My whole point is, and for everybody texting, this is how it is. Everybody knows how it is. It shouldn't be that way. There shouldn't be the risk of anybody getting hurt with a 95-mile-an-hour launched projectile because someone celebrated a home run. And I don't know what we have to do to sort of get past this.
Well, so I think for the people that say that, watch the glove next time you watch a game. Just sit there, mute it, whatever. Watch the catcher's glove. Watch how many times the pitcher misses the catcher's glove, and it has to go straight up in the air. If you say, oh, he hit him in the backside, that's okay. What happens if the catcher's glove rises? You know, like, what happens if he misses? That you're adding to the probability that someone gets severely injured. So I'm hedging a little bit as we're talking here because I get why emotion happens in baseball. I was emotional yesterday. The game is emotional. I get that. If the batter came right up, you could see that emotional level. When you pull yourself from it and it's much more of an ego thing and a protect our house sort of thing, get the guy out. I will stand by that forever. Get the guy out. That's your choice, and that's the way to shrink somebody's ego.
Lost in all of this nonsense is the fact that Tim Anderson hit a home run. It was his fourth. He's been fantastic all year. Michael Beller, who I like a lot, Sports Illustrated, has pointed out that he's been so much better hitting sliders this year. What's been the biggest difference for Anderson with Anderson for you?
We showed the two-strike numbers. He is a much better two-strike hitter, and we also showed his batting stance. He's much more upright. He was giving the pitcher some extra outside corner. We talked about this visually. He feels like he was giving an inch or two. Sorry, Comerica Park is crazy right now.
That'll happen.
He was giving an inch or two to the pitcher on the outside corner because he thought the strike zone was larger than it actually was based on his visual pass. So that's the difference for me, for Tim. And also, he believes in himself as a person much more, and he's him much more. He was trying to be things. He's talked about this with me before. He was trying to be a baseball player in 2016 and 2017. Now he understands the input. He's watching a lot more video. All of that leads to a much better player who still shouldn't have been ejected yesterday.
And outside of everything, they lost a game. They had plenty of opportunities to win and to hold on. That's really what we hadn't discussed. Yeah, Tim Anderson hit a home run, and yeah, we had the controversy, but that was a winnable game that they let get past him. And there were several guys who had bad games. Jose Abreu looks like he's not quite comfortable.
Yeah, we were talking about this actually about an hour ago. He usually hits really well against the Tigers, and I know there's not a lot of a correlation there, a lot of a causation necessarily, or those numbers will not necessarily play in the future. But he hits the ball well against the Tigers. We'll see if he can do more with this series than he has in the past. But yeah, it's been a strange start for him. It really has.
Lucas Giolito goes down too after throwing some of the best baseball that was a short sample. I mean, just like two innings or so. But boy, did he look good to start things off.
He looked really good, and demeanor-wise, he looked like he was in charge. He was marshaling the game. There was none of that step off, fall off the mound, and then wonder. He's such a smart guy. You can see the wheels turning sometimes, and I think that's why he was so frustrated, because he felt really good yesterday.
Jason, appreciate it, man. I really enjoyed your work yesterday. In the moment, that was real. That was the first time I heard you get your dander up a little bit, and that was I hope for much more.
Well, here's the thing. I got a couple tweets of, hey, why did you praise Joe West on Friday night? The answer is he had a really good strike zone, and he had a very good night behind the plate. I am all for fairness. I'm all for crediting umpires when they do something great, and you hear me do that much more than I do what happened yesterday. But if somebody gets unjustly thrown out because of whatever reason, I'm not even going to guess as to why, you just can't sit there.
Damn straight. Jason, thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Jason Benetti, brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee.
That makes a lot of sense. Huh?
Yes, he often does. And yeah. The fact that, look, he is a lawyer. He went to law school. He understands the way the law works for certain reactions based on how far, how the proximity to the moment of ire. And it's why we have different laws for those things. He gets it. During their spring sales event, save $10,000 on a new 19 GMC Acadia, over $6,000 on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC has over 400 vehicles for every budget. For offer details, visit anthonygurnee.com. We have the midway coming up. I have a new species of mammalian predator that has been discovered that is one seriously nasty animal.
Great, we needed one of those.
Once roamed this earth. This thing is a sumbitch, I am telling you. You do not want to cross paths with Homo luzonensis.
No, never have.
Is that right? Or is that that is?
Might have been.
No, excuse me. This one, the name of it, I'm going to give you the name. And it is Simbacubwa kutoka Africa. Is the name of this animal.
Don't Google that while you're driving. Don't do that. I've got a case of missing ducks that has been solved, but not in a good way. A case of missing ducks.
Like a crazy case.
And now we've got them back. The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway is here after the first half of our show featured a lot of discussion of the incident regarding Tim Anderson and the Royals yesterday, and our conversation with Jason Benetti helped flesh that out a little bit. talking about this ridiculous, antiquated baseball police. They're still empowered, especially in places like Kansas City. And I think, to me, this story has so many layers because it's Tim Anderson, because it's the Royals, because Joe West was involved. This wasn't just some typical neutral example of a guy somehow being policed for daring to celebrate a home run. We also mentioned the news that broke at the outset of the show that it was initially ABC 7 that reported that Chet Kopech died at age 70 after a car accident in Savannah, Georgia.
So we have a pretty packed show today. We're going to have Ian Rappaport in a couple of minutes, 10:40. Len Casper at 11, as per usual. So I'm going to slip in a more sportsy than usual midday story because I think it's something we probably ought to keep an eye on, and I didn't want it to go past us. You saw the viral video of Noah Syndergaard in his last start where he's taking two fingers to the palm of the glove and kind of dipping them around, looking
everyone's
for something.
Wondering, what is he picking
so
up in there?
So he's made comments. Syndergaard, well aware of the video that went viral in recent days, but the Mets right-hander denies there was anything nefarious about his actions. Here's the issue. If I were doctoring up the baseballs, I wouldn't be throwing 86-mile-an-hour sliders, Syndergaard told the Post. On a cold night at Citizens Bank Park on Monday, it's possible Syndergaard was concealing pine tar that would have helped him grip the baseball. But Syndergaard, who surrendered 5 runs over 5 innings, wouldn't directly answer to that charge. He said, instead, those baseballs felt like ice cubes. Watch a video of a dog trying to pick up an ice cube. That's what it was like. Though pitchers are banned from using pine tar, the rule is seldom enforced unless the opposing team complains. A notable exception in 14 when the Yankees' Michael Pineda was ejected for applying pine tar to his neck. Remember, he looked like he had just like swam in pine tar or something. Came out with a whole bunch of it on his neck. So I ask you this, as captain, the ball is juiced again on day 3 of the Major League Baseball season. That's a very long title for you. We should work to shorten that.
Yeah, please. Big business card.
Is this part of it?
Yeah.
Is this part of what's going on?
It is, and it reminds me that when we were first talking about this in 2016, post All-Star break 2015, pitchers knew.
Verlander, Stroman, Heilman, all those guys were talking about the blisters that were popping up when they had never had blister problems before.
And we know it's a texture issue. It's not a coefficient of restitution issue. It's not a springiness. It's not a bounciness issue. It is a surface texture issue that is making the ball slide through the air. Maybe it's also making it hard to grip.
All that said, Syndergaard definitely had something in his glove. Come on.
Maybe he's telling you
and
that.
And I don't care.
Maybe he's saying, well, of course I have something in my glove because these balls are so slippery.
Of course he does.
You had done a paleontological story before about Homo luzonensis, which was the new species of human being, that missing link species.
How cool is that?
I mistakenly read off that name as I was looking at a picture for this story. But 23 million years ago, we now know a giant carnivore larger than any modern-day lion or polar bear stalked sub-Saharan Africa. And the story of this is insane. These are according to fossils of previously undiscovered species. The fossils were in a drawer in a museum.
Come on.
The jaw, the skull, the skeleton, the teeth were in the National Museum of Kenya. The fossils were found in Kenya decades ago. They were thought to be of a smaller species, but those researchers were searching for ancient apes.
Okay.
The fossils were put aside. So other paleontologists, this is Matthew Borths, who is the study author, curator of the Division of Fossil Primates at Duke. He said, opening a museum drawer, we saw a row of gigantic meat-eating teeth, clearly belonging to a species new to science. They just found it.
So what do they think this bad boy was? Like this giant lion thing?
They are calling it Simbakubwa Kutoka Africa, Swahili.
It's a lovely name.
For big lion coming from Africa, but it's not a close relative.
Big lion coming for your life.
It's not a close relative of lions, other big cats, or even mammalian carnivores that roam the earth today.
Oh.
It is a hyaenodont, an extinct group of mammalian carnivores that lived in Africa. Now, it is believed to have been 3,200 pounds.
Same.
And what did it eat? It ate herbivores.
Anything it wanted, apparently.
It ate herbivores akin to today's elephants and hippopotami.
Whoa.
That's what it ate.
It took down the big guys.
It was an elephant eater. It was 3,200 pounds of, and I believe the technical paleontological term is rompin' stompin' dynamite.
I was going to say fat.
No, I don't think fat. It was ate nothing but protein. It was incapable of eating plants, and it might have been why it died out. It had no molars.
Same.
They're going to find the same drawer in Kenya as the bones of Rick Camp.
Rick's dentist is very confused. When a South Australian man laid eyes on Joey the Unicorn Sheep, he knew he couldn't let such a rare animal end up on someone's dinner plate.
Is that a nickname?
No, Michael Foster.
Hey, don't mess with Joey the Unicorn Sheep.
Michael Foster is a stock agent, but in all his years being around sheep, he had never seen anything like Joey. The unusual sheep has a horn growing from the middle of his head, making him look like a unicorn. Joey's mythical appearance comes from one of his horns not fully developing, making it a lot more prominent than the other. Thought it might have been a joke to start with, but I thought, yeah, it looks like a unicorn. To the best of our knowledge, it's the only one in Australia. So when Foster found Joey, the unicorn, he was destined for the barbecue. Joey, the unicorn, not Foster. But he knew the sheep was special and had to be saved. So in true Australian form, Foster offered up 2 cartons of beer and got to take Joey home. So if you're looking for the exchange rate in Australia,
okay,
1 unicorn goat is equal to 2 cases of beer. That's not so bad. That's a good exchange. Well, it says cartons, which I assume is the Australian
cases,
equivalent of cases.
I would think.
I would guess so.
But if it's Australian beer cans, it could be like the giant Foster's guy.
It's, you know, actually a keg.
A
carton is actually a keg in Australia. It's a completely different one. So they've got Joey the Unicorn Sheep now. They're going to show him off to kids and whatnot in a petting zoo, and I'm sure he's got a great life of not being eaten.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch your Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round Friday and Saturday night at 7 at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit chicagowolves.com. If I were to ask you who was responsible for denting the Lombardi Trophy after using it as a makeshift baseball bat.
Come on.
What would your locus of possible answers be?
Yeah, 99% Rob Gronkowski, 1% Tom Brady in a fit of rage.
It's 100% Rob Gronkowski,
yeah, okay, all right,
and you know it is. So Gronkowski is retired, but it doesn't stop Gronk from gronking in the way only Gronk can gronk. The Super Bowl champs were being honored at Fenway Park before the Red Sox season opener back on April 3rd, but we now know that Gronkowski dented the 6th Lombardi Trophy when he used it as a baseball bat. Julian Edelman was seen in a video. He was sort of lining up for a pitch, and as a joke, he was holding up the Lombardi Trophy like a bat. So the special teams captain, Matthew Slater, said it was all fun and games until it wasn't. Jason McCourty said everyone figured they were pretending, thinking no way is he going to swing the Lombardi Trophy. But sure enough, Gronk switched from a batting stance to bunt position, making a loud enough sound to ensure that he made contact. He has now left an everlasting mark so that people will never forget he was part of that championship team.
Yo soy siesta.
And the New England Patriots have posted a picture of their trophies together with the one at the end with the dent in it, saying Rob Gronkowski has left a mark on this organization and on the 6th Lombardi.
I take you to Martin Wells Lake in South Yorkshire, which is in northern England.
They do a great pudding.
They do. I'm sure they do. Tony Hooper, a mother of 32 years old, was walking around Lake Martin Wells. And with a number of other people who live around the lake, there's a park there, kids play, they swim in the lake and all that kind of stuff. They were noticing that over the last couple of weeks, fewer and fewer ducks were on the pond.
Okay.
Which was strange to them. There were a lot of ducks. This was a duck-filled pond, Lake Martin Wells.
You say on the pond like a baseball guy, but it would probably be in the pond if we're actually doing
on the pond, like a baseball guy. So they're getting to the park. There's not a lot of ducks. Only one duck and a couple of ducklings just last Sunday. So they're walking around, and one of the people around the lake who lives around town is Gary Walker, 34 years old, currently out of work, but often fishes at the site, not unlike one Dan Bernstein, walking around to local lakes and just seeing what
they
can.
That time of year, I keep the little spin combo in the trunk.
So I don't know if you've ever encountered a fish of this variety while fishing locally, but you wouldn't expect it in South Yorkshire as well. They pulled a piranha out of the lake.
Whoa.
Yeah, and now they're starting to pull multiple piranhas out of the lake. No one seems to know how they got there.
Wait, anglers are catching them, or are they just fine?
One of them was found.
Okay.
One of the piranhas just was found, like, floating somewhere in the lake or, like, up on shore or something. And another one was found while fishing. It doesn't say whether it was actually caught or they found it and then went to go catch the thing.
Wow. And another guy just put his arm in there and wanted to see what happened.
Yeah, just noodled a piranha out of the lake. No one seems to know how they got there. It's highly unlikely, says one of the.
I'll tell you exactly how they got there. Somebody had them in a tank. They got too big, and they dumped them.
The pets that got dumped into the lake. These are big. I mean, look at the size of this.
There's no way that the water temperature.
Yeah. So apparently these things have died off. They can't find any more of them. But there were a couple of piranha in this lake, got dumped in there, and the kids were swimming around and the whole thing. I don't know how big an animal a piranha can go after. I've watched Animal Planet as much as anybody else.
Yeah, they've gone after like wildebeests.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, one
have to. One guy's not going to come after the small child. I mean, I suppose you don't want to figure that out.
It's just people with these pets have to stop doing this.
Well, you know, I had a bull shark in my tank, and it just finally got too big, and I was feeding it puppies for a while, and I just had to dump it over on the golf course.
Come on.
Bad idea.
Bad idea. That is the Midday Midway, brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network and NFL.com is going to give us his thoughts. A scheduled release day is always kind of weird because there's so many empty spaces to fill in despite things we don't know about anything, and we do it anyway. I want to find out from him what he thinks matters today.
Ian Rappaport coming up. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station, Ian Rappaport.
Here is what we know right now.
Insider for the NFL Network.
Get out your notebook. There's more.
Breaking news across the National Football League.
This is something that has been going on through the wee hours of last night, really round-the-clock discussions.
The Rap Sheet and Friends podcast.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Ian Rappaport with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Here's Ian Rappaport on Twitter at Rap Sheet, NFL.com, NFL Network, the Rap Sheet and Friends podcast, the latest edition featuring Dwayne Haskins,
ooh,
Josh Jacobs, and Debo Samuel. And Ian joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So it's schedule release time. What of all of this is meaningful to you?
Let's see. Now, I'm a very selfish person when it comes to my schedule. Mm-hmm. I like to know what I'm doing. So for me, the first thing is, what are the NFL Network games? We knew the opener, so, which is awesome. But we knew that obviously, from the owners meeting. So for me, it's like, what games are on NFL Network? How is our schedule? And it's looking really good. And then how many games are actually on Sunday instead of game day morning? And this year, for the first time, NFL Network has 2 9:30 start Sunday morning games, which means two days without game day morning, which means I don't have to travel into the city on two Sundays. So that's
okay.
Nice.
That makes a lot of sense to me. That's how a reporter should look at something like this.
Because otherwise, like, you know, it's all this stuff we knew. I mean, I'm also there will be some weeks where I won't even look at who's playing who until like Thursday, just because news takes me in a different direction. So, but yeah, schedule release was something.
Well, it's no secret that the Bears have been pushed into primetime. They have the full allotment of primetime games, plus the game in London, plus the game on Thanksgiving, and then they open the season, of course. I mean, there's no coincidence here. They're big TV.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no bigger spot than the opener, right? I mean, and I kind of think that this is where the Bears should be, which, you know, not everything is equitable, right? Like, there are teams that don't have a primetime game. I believe the Bills don't. You know, it's not like the Titans or the Jaguars or the Bucks are going to be, like, in five primetime games. It's just not like that. You know, Mahomes is going to be in a lot of spots. Brady, obviously. I mean, that's the kind of thing that the league leans to. It's very transparent when it comes to, like, we're going to put our best brands, our best teams, and our biggest franchises on TV as much as possible. And I think the Bears, I mean, I think they're going to be good. They were good last year. I think they're going to be good for a while. And they have enough stars where it's going to force people to tune in. Like, I think this is what it's going to be like for the Bears for a while now, because I don't think they're going to get any worse. Why would they? So I think this is kind of reality now.
We're also at voluntary workout season, and it always used to be wink, wink, the understanding that despite the fact that the union has negotiated all of these rules to make things technically voluntary, it doesn't mean the coaches don't have different expectations, the coaches don't hold it against players, and I don't know how well some of that stuff is policed, but do we still have that overridingly at some of these training camps where a coach says, yeah, I know it's voluntary, but I expect your dumbass to be here?
No. I kind of think it's changed a little bit. I was talking about this actually on the podcast, which dropped yesterday, by the way. So I think it's different now, and partially because maybe we've gotten smarter as like a football fan base, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just more common. Like when guys skip voluntary workouts, I don't think anybody cares as much. You know, like guys will sort of let coaches know, like, hey, I'm not showing up till I get a new contract. Coach is like, okay. You know, like it's different from the way it was. Hearing someone like Tom Coughlin, as he just did, say, you know, I believe every player should be here. You don't hear that a lot. You hear it from someone as old school as him, but for most of the guys I talk to, they're sort of like, yeah, I mean, whatever. Like, and look, Aaron Donald didn't show up for training camp at all and was one of the best players in the NFL. By the way, neither did Khalil Mack, and I think he was okay. He was pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
5 days.
You know, I don't think the lack of I don't think the lack of training camp really hurt him too bad, right? So I think it's all guys are in such good shape now. I just think it's different from the way it ever was.
Talking football with Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet on Twitter. He's of NFL.com and the NFL Network, of course. We saw in an interview with SITV that Josh Rosen understands that this situation for him kind of, you know, sucks. What are you hearing about a draft day possibility, maybe a trade or Rosen leaving the Cardinals? What's the probability of that happening?
You know, I don't right now, as it sits right now, I do not feel great about that possibility. And I know everyone assumes Kyler Murray is going number one. I am not among those people. I think it's much more open. Now, maybe the Cardinals have decided, but I think they probably have. But I haven't talked to anyone who actually knows the decision or will be willing to share it. And so while Josh Rosen is kind of in flux now and frustrated, as he, you know, should be with his situation, if they don't take Kyler Murray, he'll be fine because they could easily say, like, hey, look, we let you twist in the wind, but it was for the betterment of this franchise that you are the face of, so don't worry about it. Like, they can prove, the Cardinals can prove to Josh Rosen that it was all nonsense if they don't take Kyler Murray, and it won't be BS because they'll say, look, like, we didn't take him. The other thing for me is, if Kyler Murray knows he's going number one, what's he doing going on trips to the Giants and the Redskins? And he eventually canceled the Redskins, but he was set to go there. So why? If he knows he's going one, like, what is he doing?
Do we know what was behind his canceling that meeting in Washington?
I think just didn't think he was going to be there and didn't want to waste the time. And I'm not, honestly, like, I'm not sure the Redskins are that high in him anyway, so I think it's probably fine.
The Bears will be playing the Raiders at noon local time on Sunday, October 6th in London, the new stadium of Tottenham Hotspur. Is the way to do this established now? Is there an understood protocol for preparing a team for having the upset circadian rhythms and everything a little bit off? Has the NFL helped sort of standardize the process for everybody so teams don't have a team that's unprepared to play?
I think teams do it differently. It's as, you know, I thought, to me, it makes a lot of sense to come in like Wednesday and just acclimate, and by the time game time comes, like, you're fine. Not everybody does that. Some teams come in, like, Thursday night or Friday morning, and some teams just try to make it, like, as, you know, quick as possible and don't worry about it. There's no standard thing. The other thing is, it used to be teams would always get a bye after the London game. That's not the case anymore. Some teams say, you know what, like, our players will sleep on the plane. We're going to use our bye another time. So there's actually no standard way to do it. Now, this is going to be cool. I don't know. Are you guys going over for that?
Well, we hope so. We're lobbying for that, so. Yeah.
I will say this. I hope you guys do, too. You should. it's awesome. And the new stadium is going to be really cool.
What's awesome about it?
It was all like renovated and it was all renovated for football and, you know, sparkling new. What's awesome about the trip?
Yeah.
Oh, the main thing is it's like, so we all unfortunately take so much of this for granted. It's so cool to see football presented to people who do not always get it. Because the enthusiasm is something that I can almost not describe. Like, I was there for, you know, a bunch of years ago for Patriots, Bucks, and it was like going to a concert because there was so much excitement. Like, the energy level is just different. It feels a little more like, say, college football than the NFL because everyone's so excited that the league is there. And that's something that, you know, for those of us old curmudgeons, like, even that's really cool.
It's funny you bring that up because I remember reading something years ago that the idea of somebody being exposed to a sport for the first time, sometimes it's the most mundane things that are appreciated in, like you say, in ways that we take for granted. And this was a baseball story, but it was somebody who brought a foreign friend to his first baseball game, never seen the sport before, and was blown away by how they catch fly balls and pop-ups. And it wasn't hitting a 100-mile-an-hour pitch. And he kept asking, how do they know where it's going to land? You know, it was just this thing that we take for granted. It just blew his mind.
You know what? I can sort of relate to that. So I had a bunch of some of my friends from high school are big Giants fans, come in to town when the Giants played on Thursday night against the Eagles and lost by a million. When we kind of realized that the Giants season was not going to be good. And they were standing on the sidelines with me before the game, and they couldn't believe how fast it was. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just like, and these are all big football fans who have gone to games and have seasons. They were just blown away how big everyone is and how fast it is. They're like, I just can't believe it. And imagine being someone who hasn't seen it before. And I have two small kids, and I've taken them to baseball games, not a football game yet, but baseball games, and to see the things that their eyes get opened by is very, very cool.
And before we let you go, I was reading about Nick Bosa a little while ago. I think he's the best player in the draft. I think he ought to go number one overall if you're just drafting on talent alone. He deleted a bunch of his tweets and I think Instagram posts as well. All of them.
Did
very
he finally?
I believe he deleted a whole bunch. I don't know if he deleted all of them. I guess I shouldn't go that far. But he said he did it because he might get drafted by San Francisco. His tweets are very conservative. They're very right-leaning. And apparently he's aware of the issue that might cause. Do you think teams care?
I don't think they don't care. Because none of this exists in a vacuum. I mean, if the Bills cared last year about Josh Allen's tweets from when he was like, of rap lyrics when he was 16 or whenever, then I think the 49ers will care about Nick Bosa tweeting about Trump, or I believe one of the ones he deleted was about Kaepernick, actually, not Trump. But, I think they care. I don't think it would be disqualifying, but it's a thing. And, you know, one thing that's so scary about social media, and thank God I wasn't on social media in high school or college, is it all factors into the equation. Like, it's amazing the amount of teams I've heard say, like, yeah, you know, we were looking into this guy, then we took a look at his social media, and we took him off our board, or we ruled him out, or, you know, we did a deep dive. We had to call him back into the facility and ask questions because of some stuff on social media. Like, that all is actually real.
How?
So I don't think it's going to stop Bosa from getting drafted, but it is a thing.
How is it, Ian, that in this day and age, an agent's first job, like as soon as you start talking to an agent, their first job is, regardless of what side you lean to or another, go through the guy's social media. You have your bottom-ranked intern, whoever's just come into the agency, your job is to take Nick Bosa's social profile and just make it all go away. How is that not job one in this day and age?
Right. I think it probably is. So I think any sort of other tweets that should not be out there were probably deleted, not just from Bosa, but from anyone. Yeah. Problem is, some of the stuff he's done was like the last couple of weeks.
That's true.
You know, following certain people and liking certain people. And, you know, I haven't read into it as much. I don't follow him on Instagram. No offense. I don't follow a lot of people on Instagram. So, he's a human, and so he does human things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like that. But I will tell you what's going to be interesting for me is I have not heard he's the best player in the draft. I mean, he's very good, but most people I talk to think Quinnen Williams is the top overall player in the draft.
Right.
I'm sure Bosa's going too, I guess. But it's going to be interesting if he doesn't, where he ends up going.
We'll be watching, and I know we will be having you on to discuss. Always funny, and thank you.
Thanks.
Weirdest interview ever. No questions about the first round of the draft. you got Khalil Mack.
So Bears pick 87. Yeah, right. We're all good here.
Yeah, Ian Rappaport. rap sheet at NFL.com and NFL Network. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch the Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round Friday and Saturday night at 7 at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Let's talk Cubs with Len Casper. The Red Hot Cubs.
Hell yeah.
Urgency.
Just face the Marlins.
Urgency. That was your getaway day that Theo Epstein was talking about, and they came through. And whatever that guy Dean was trying to do in left field on that Descalso hit is completely beyond me.
Looked like me out there.
What was that?
It's horrendous. Len Casper is up next. Courtesy of McKnight, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.